The following audio is from Shiloh Presbyterian Church in Raleigh, North Carolina. More information about Shiloh Presbyterian Church is available at shilohopc.org.
So I'd like to do some guided imagery with you. I'd like you to imagine that you're a mom who has a prayer partner named Pamela Frost, and that you pray with her every day while she writes talks on yoga. And then you send your son in Encinitas, California, to public school, and he comes home 4 weeks later in his kindergarten year with a little half sheet of paper in his backpack telling you that he has been doing yoga at school twice a week for the last 4 weeks and will for the entirety of his school career at that school. And imagine yourself trying not to completely freak out. That was my experience when my son started kindergarten. And I'm here today to talk to you about some of what is happening in schools across America, specifically about the program in Encinitas, because that's the one with which I'm most familiar, but to describe to you this movement that really is nationwide. It really is a worldwide movement. Yoga is everywhere. And to talk to you about some of the implications of our culture allowing this practice to be taught in our schools. So just first, a description of what happened in Encinitas. Our school had a program that was launched the year that my son started kindergarten. And because I had been praying with Pam as she was developing a talk on yoga, I was slightly sensitized to the word yoga and decided that even though it would be a whole lot easier for me to take that piece of paper and shove it back in his backpack and say to him, "Have a great time stretching, son," I probably should go and find out what was actually happening in this program. And so I called the school and told them that I was a little concerned about my son practicing yoga, and I was immediately reassured that this was actually a program that was being practiced on both coasts. It was nothing new. It had been approved for public school use, and that I could come and look at a class if I wanted to, but there was nothing religious about it. All religion, any reference to religion had been stripped out. It was essentially an exercise program. And so, feeling a little foolish, I said, "Well, okay, thank you very much, but I'd still like you to keep my son out of the class, and I would like to come and observe what's happening." And so I went with the principal of the school at that time, and I watched a class of third grade students practicing public school approved yoga in Encinitas one sunny California day. And I really did feel a fool going in. We have been told so often by so many people that yoga is spiritual but not religious, that it's acceptable for anyone. And I went in expecting to walk back out feeling just as foolish. What I saw that day changed everything for me and confirmed for me what Pam had been talking about in her research as we had prayed. I can't go through all of the specifics of what happened in that class, but I'd like to highlight two things. The first was that the teacher, who was very sweet, a very lovely woman, was talking to the students about the sun and asking them what the sun offered them in their lives. What good things did the sun give them? And the kids were talking about how the sun made them feel warm. And a little boy brought up that we wouldn't have any food if not for the sun, because the sun makes plants grow. And the teacher acknowledged that that was true, which really meant that the sun also gave us our life, because we don't have life without food. And then they started to practice the Surya Namaskara, the sun salutation sequence of yoga, which you will find predominantly is a sequence that's held in its entirety in most of the forms of yoga practice today in the United States. And as the children were performing the sun salutation, the teacher was reminding them of how thankful they should be to the sun for its warmth, to the sun for their lives, to the sun for their food. A little bit different from the things that I teach my son as a Christian mom. The clincher for me at the end of that class was that the teacher then had all of the students gather into a circle and put their hands in front of themselves in lotus position and bow to themselves and say, "I see the light in me." And some of this terminology is going to sound familiar from Pam's talk. "I see the light in me," and then bow to students next to them. "I see the light in you." And then reach all the way around that circle they were sitting in and say, "The light in all of us makes us one. Namaste." And that was how they closed the class. And the teacher said to the students as they were leaving, "Remember, namaste means respect." This is where my training in thinking in categories of oneism and twoism really hit the ground for me. I'm a wimpy Christian. I get scared of offending people a lot of times. I fumble over my words. But as I was walking out of that classroom, I was so shocked. And I said to the principal, well, and I was fumbling for something to say to him, and he said, so see, it's fine. It's not a religious program. And and he said, so we'll go ahead and just put your son back in. And I said, no. At which point he turned around to me with this shocked look on his face, and he said, what? We're teaching your kids to stretch and to respect each other. You're a Christian. You want your kid to respect other people, don't you? And I was finally able to put my finger on what I had seen, what was so different in there. And I was able to say to him, I do teach my child to respect other people, but I teach him to respect other people because he's created in the image of a holy God. Two, right? We have the holy God and the creator. What you are teaching those children in there is that they respect each other because everyone's carrying around a divine spark inside of them. That's drastically different from what I teach my son at home as a Christian. So they pulled him out, and slowly parents started pulling their children out throughout the year as I kind of talked to different parents, and we were hoping that we could be just pesky enough to get the program out of the school. And we did. Unfortunately, they pulled it out so that they could bring in a new yoga program that was actually district-wide. And this program was named the Joyce Yoga Program. And it was named after Sri K. Pattabhi Joyce. Pam talked to you a little bit about Joyce. And the Joyce Foundation, Joyce died about eight or nine years ago now, but he has a foundation in his name that is backed by a billionaire hedge fund couple who were disciples of his. And one of his desires as he was dying was that he would see Ashtanga yoga spread into all of the schools in the nation. He'd actually wanted that for India. And the Joyce Foundation paid $533,000 to our school district so that they could have access to our nearly 6,000 children in our district spread over nine schools. To build distinct yoga shalas on every campus that were dedicated to yoga practice only. They didn't say to keep the space pure, but that's a very, very big deal in Ashtanga yoga. So they wanted to and are in the process of building yoga shalas on the public school campuses. And not only were they going to be teaching the children the postural exercises of Ashtanga yoga specifically, they were developing a cross-disciplinary curriculum that was going to be brought into the classroom. So in science, there was going to be yogic philosophy and yogic life skills. In health class, yogic philosophy and yogic life skills. And so some of us were a little concerned about that. And we decided to gather together in a concerned parents meeting. And as we talked about the things that were happening at the various different schools, we kept being told by the school district in response to our complaints, it's not religious. All of the religion has been stripped out of it. This is not religious what we're teaching to your kids. It's science. It's stretching. And based on my experiences, I didn't really think that they were great authorities on whether or not this yoga was religious. So you may have heard about some of this yoga public school controversy as the case was actually taken to court after total non-responsiveness by the district. It was taken to court. And I'll get into that a little bit more in just a minute. But lest you think that this is an anomaly because I come from the crazy state of California, I am constantly contacted by parents, who have known me through church or have heard my name and our ministry's name now through the news because of my involvement with the court case in California, who are running into yoga all over the place. I just recently started talking to a mom whose family just moved to a state here on the East Coast. And in her school, every single day, video announcements are given to the K through fifth grade at this school site. And with those video announcements, the ASB in the fifth grade leads all of the children in the school in several yoga poses. And then they lead the children in the day's starting meditation where they ring a specially toned bell and the children all all meditate together. And the Joyce Foundation, which after the court case renamed itself to Sonima, in the face of the fact that we're now going to appeals court for what's happening in Encinitas, moved forward, gave $2 to $3 million to the Encinitas School District, and is now launching a nationwide program into 100 different school districts all across the country with something called the Heart of Smart Curriculum. And you'll be happy to know that they have a new face with Joyce and Sonima, and it's Stedman Graham, Oprah Winfrey's boyfriend, who is teaching an inspirational curriculum to the students where they are being taught to trust their hearts because their hearts are smart. And all of the students who are a part of this program are receiving the Heart of Smart songbook, which has poetry written by the daughter of the billionaires who are funding this, and has the entire Surya Namaskara Ashtanga pose sequence listed in pictures so that students can learn how to do that. And where in one poem, students are told that their hearts and their minds don't necessarily have to conflict. They can work together as students are learning to make decisions through their lives. But if they ever run into a part, a decision or a choice that they need to make where their mind is telling them one thing and their heart is telling them another, they need to let their heart lead and to ignore their rational mind. There are samples of that songbook that you can see, and I'd be happy to provide you links if you'd like to look at it. So this is a nationwide issue. And when we did go to court in Encinitas, the lower court that we went to initially ruled that while yoga was religious, and Ashtanga physical yoga especially was especially religious, EUSD could continue with the program, which kind of surprised us, especially because later on when pressed by Dean Broyles, the attorney with whom the parents are working, he went back to the judge and caused the judge to amend his ruling and actually say that Ashtanga yoga was exactly the same yoga that was being practiced in EUSD, that the poses, while maybe being called different things, were exactly the same in sequence and style as they were being taught to these children in the classroom. An irony in all of this is at the same time, there is a group of religious yogis in India who are seeking to bring yoga into the public schools in India throughout that entire country. And the lower courts tossed it out and said, no way can you do yoga in our public schools. It's really offensive to ask Muslims and Christians to do Hindu religious exercise. And so that court case's awaiting decision has actually made it all the way to the Indian Supreme Court, and they're expected to decide on that sometime within the next year. But the reason it's gotten to the Supreme Court there is because every other court in India has tossed it out and said, you're crazy. It's religious exercise. We're supposed to have secular schools. So I think it's important for us to look at some of the ways that yoga has been gotten into the public schools here in the United States. And the language that's used, and even some of the, some of the concessions that were made by the district in Encinitas and by the Joyce Foundation were, okay, we'll change all of the wording. And we're going to still call it yoga, but we'll use different words for the poses. So now they're calling things like bunny pose and toad pose and boat pose, although some of those are actually yoga poses, but they're masking it all with childlike language. And so now yoga shouldn't bother you. And there's a lot of this masking of language, and we'll rename everything. We won't make any reference to the religious aspects of it, or they like to call it cultural aspects of it. And so I think it's important for us to understand why they're so willing to do that as long as they can still keep the yogic exercises in the school. And a really quick test case for that is someone named Tara Guber. And Tara founded the most popular public school yoga program called Yoga Ed, and it originated in Colorado. And when she first launched this yoga program into the public schools, by her description, the fundamentalists got upset. Most specifically, the fundamentalist Baptists got upset. And they said, this is ridiculous. You cannot have our children practicing yoga. We are Christians. We have our children in a public school, but we cannot be asked by the public schools to practice yoga. And Tara did this very thing. She agreed to rename everything, except for yoga. She still wanted to call this series of exercise poses yoga. They renamed the poses. They took even the pranayama breathing, which is also being taught in Encinitas, and they started calling it bunny breathing. They renamed everything. But they would not change the poses. And eventually this program was approved in Colorado. Once it was approved in Colorado and people got more comfortable with it, it spread all across the nation. Several years later, Tara Guber was interviewed by Hinduism Today. And she confided to that interviewer that no matter what its components were called, yogic practice still, for all of the students, would go within, shift their consciousness, and alter their beliefs anyway. And that's why she was willing to make that concession. She knew she was being disingenuous. She actually was proud of it. And they called this a Vedic victory by one brave soul over fundamentalism. So there's Tara, but is Tara simply an anomaly? Well, for our school district, I think it's really important to go to the source, to look at what the Joyce Foundation founders and what the Joyce Foundation teachers actually have to say about their yoga themselves. Interestingly, the wording that they use in the media when they're talking about their school program is very different than the wording that they use when they're talking about Ashtanga yoga in amongst themselves with other people who are more accepting of the things that they're doing. Joyce believed that yoga was about knowing God inside of you. Doing yoga outside of spiritual practice was actually bad for you. He said that the foundation of Ashtanga yoga was the sun salutation, which was the necessary obeisance to the sun god Surya, before beginning any type of yogic practice. And he also said that the compulsory practice of yogasana, so just those poses, if it had been done in India the way he wanted it to in the public school system, would purify the nation just by the practice of those physical poses. His one clearest statement from Joyce on yoga is pretty powerful. The reason we do yoga is to become one with God and to realize Him in our hearts. You can lecture, you can talk about God, but when you practice correctly, you come to experience God inside. Some people start yoga and don't even know of Him. They don't even want to know of Him. But for anyone who practices yoga correctly, the love of God will develop. And after some time, a greater love of God will be theirs, whether they want it or not. This is true, and that is why yoga is real. It develops inside you and helps you to realize the inner light of capital S self. So just because this founder of the Joyce Foundation believed these things, does that mean that the people who are involved with the Joyce Foundation as taught in Encinitas, do they believe those same things? I have one more quote for you. I could go on and on with these quotes. But Manju Joyce is the son, the eldest son of Pattabhi Joyce, and he lives in Encinitas and is actually the head of the Yogashala there. His wife is a kindergarten teacher in one of the elementary schools in Encinitas, and she's also the head yoga teacher there. He stated over and over again, and actually in an online radio debate with Dean Broyles, the attorney who has represented the parents who are suing the school district, that it was ridiculous for us to even try and say that yoga had anything to do with religion or spirituality, that it really was about mindfulness, relaxation, and emotional control. But this is Manju Joyce in another context where he was amongst yogis. Yoga is to unite. That's what soham means. And to step back a sec, soham is a meditative mantra. It's something that people say sometimes like om. And it means I am that and that is I. That's the best way that I can kind of describe it. It's this acknowledgement that we are one with the universe and the universe is us. So he says that's what soham means. I am God. I am the creator. I am the Vishnu, the preserver. I am the Shiva, the destroyer, and I am the creator, capital C. I am the creator, the Brahma. I am all three, and three is you. What you create is what you see. God's not over there. He's inside of you. He's making you do all of your things. We think that someone did something to us, but no, you did it. It's all your own creation. You've got to unite within yourself, and then there won't be any more confusion. See, we're having a problem uniting with ourselves. And he goes through to talk about how we have ego and impurity in ourselves. He says that we're totally filled with filth. That rings a little bit true, doesn't it? But here's his conclusion. So we have to purify all those things, and then we can see exactly what reality is. That is what yoga is all about. His nephew, who is the guru of the head teacher for the Joyce Foundation, and she testified from the stand that she viewed Charlotte Joyce as her guru. There was no other guru or yoga teacher who could tell her how to do yoga. It was Charlotte Joyce who was her guru and who she would listen to. And he said that many people think yoga is like a gym. And he goes on to say people like to take classes and they think that maybe they can even teach yoga, but that's not what yoga is. Yoga is spiritual. You should consider it a spiritual practice, not just exercise, spiritual. He repeated it over and over again. And he also says asana, so the physical poses of yoga, is the foundation from which we have built up to self-realization. When you do asana correctly, then only will your mind and body transform, and you will see them change. So these are the things that the people who were insisting in public and in court that yoga was completely non-religious and that we shouldn't be concerned about it, these are the things that they really do think about the yoga that they're teaching to our children. So that begs the question, if they're stripping all the language out, if they've changed all these things, are we overreacting? Are the children in our schools really understanding that this yoga is just exercise, or do they understand that it's religious? Again, I could go on and on with stories, but I'm going to share just a few with you. Almost immediately once the program started, a little girl in kindergarten was with her family. A lot of these stories are about believing kids. A little girl was with her family at community group, and it was time for them to sing worship to the Lord. She got down on the floor, put herself in full yogic lotus position with proper hand mudras, which is a sign of submission to the divinity of Brahman. And her family looked at her and said, "What are you doing?" And she said, "Well, I'm getting into my worship pose." She had made that connection within weeks of that program having started. In another instance, there were boys out on a field during a baseball game, and they decided together that they wanted to do sun salutation before they played their game in the hopes that it would help them. And when they were done and their team had won the game, they attributed that to performing Surya Namaskara. Students were taken to the self-realization gardens on a field trip, because that's neutral. And and in front of students who had been opted out by believing parents of the yoga program decided to get up on a bench, a bunch of 8-year-old boys, put themselves into full lotus pose, and to meditate while they were there in the self-realization gardens. And this was performed in front of students, both believing and non-believing students who had been opted out and students who were in the program. One story that's come to me through another mother recently that hurts my heart, especially given the story that Pam was sharing about Mircea Eliade, I say his name wrong, but having his guru look into his eyes and enter into him in a spiritual sense. A mother had 2 children who were in the yoga program for a couple of years. She had decided not to opt them out. It's a very uncomfortable thing to be an opted out student in this setting. And both of her students came to her separately from each other and talked about how the teacher was asking them to lie down on mats, close their eyes, and open their hearts to her so that she could enter their hearts with her spirit and bring her light into their hearts during yoga meditation. And both of her children were extremely shaken up by this. And, you know, these are stories from all across the country. It's not site specific. And they were very disturbed. They were actually having nightmares and seeing black images and shapes, both students apart from each other. They hadn't talked to each other about it, but that was an experience that they had. Another little boy came home in the 3rd grade with a stomach ache, complaining to my friend because he knew that what he was learning at church and what he was learning at school, was different from what he was learning at church and at home was different from what he was being taught at school. And he had somehow made that connection that it was inappropriate for him as a Christian, even in 3rd grade, to be participating in the things that were going on in school. In Encinitas specifically, children who go to elementary school for their entire elementary career in Encinitas will receive 7 years of yogic instruction, in Ashtanga yoga. That's 7 years. Okay? Think about the implications of that. These children are being taught yoga not simply for exercise, but they're being taught to regulate their emotions through yoga. They're being taught to regulate stress through yoga. If they have problems, if there's conflict with bullying, all of it's supposed to be dealt with by yoga. They're not being told to go to their parents and talk to their parents about it. They're certainly not being told to go to a holy God who can actually help them and talk to them about it. And think about these children who 5,000 of them who have been trained up in yoga for 7 years and then launch out into the culture. Secular scholars of religion maintain that yoga, as practiced in America, is pervasively religious. That includes YMCA yoga. That includes 24-hour fitness yoga. So much of that is predicated based on what the teacher who's doing the yoga actually believes. Information about yoga outside of school settings is profoundly spiritual. All you have to do is go hit Wikipedia, Google the term yoga, and find how many links it takes you to run into spiritual terminology and into rank Hinduism. It's one link. It doesn't take very far. Think about these children launching into the culture, being taught to self-soothe and manage in the stripped-down versions of yoga that they're being taught in schools, and ask yourself, is this really neutral? It's not a neutral exercise. Talking to Christians about this has been an interesting experience. I don't generally go in to give this testimony anymore, expecting not to hurt some hearts. And that's a painful thing, because yoga has become a very personal thing to a lot of people, even Christians. And in talking to parents and talking to other people about this, a couple of things have come clear, and I'm gonna conclude on this note. We have to confront yoga. It's not an issue that you can just leave to the side that's not gonna touch you in some way. You do have friends, you do have family, you may have children at some point who are practicing and affected by yoga. You might even be using yoga yourself. I have a very dear friend who is a believer who has used yoga to manage chronic pain, and we have had some tearful, heart-wrenching conversations, because I know what she has gone through for the last 12 to 15 years with chronic pain. I understand how she got into this. And yet, it is so much more painful to think about the spiritual damage that's done by this exercise, and especially that's done when Christians participate. These practices, for Christians, are usually approached in terms of personal holiness. So a lot of people, after hearing a talk like this, will walk away and say, well, I know they say that it can change my heart. I know they say it can change my beliefs, but I'm a strong Christian. I know the gospel. I can participate anyway. I might be willing to give you that point. There are others who disagree with me, but let's just, for the sake of this last 5 minutes, say that you can do that. You, Christian, are not called merely to personal holiness in the privacy of your own home. You are called to protect your weaker brothers, and you are called to be a witness to an unbelieving world. One of the most common things that people come to me with regard to yoga and trying to figure out whether it can be redeemed for Christians or not, is Paul's discussion in 1 Corinthians 8 through 10 of meat sacrificed to idols. Here's the interesting thing. They say that there are situations in which Christians during that day could eat with good conscience meat sacrificed to idols. What I'm here to tell you is that yoga is not meat. You're the meat. Yoga is the ritual. Yoga is the sacrificial ritual. And Paul never even engaged with the idea of Christians going to the pagan temple and holding on to that sacrificial knife and sacrificing, participating in that pagan ritual, and then eating the meat. He didn't even engage with it because it wasn't an option. Yoga is also the predominant worldview of our nation today. And so as those of us who are thinking about protecting our weaker brothers, this is a place of stumbling for many people. Some of the people who weep the hardest and are the most outraged about the yoga being taught in our schools right now are those who have been saved out of Hinduism, who have been saved out of yoga, because they understand and resonate with the spiritual aspect of even doing those poses. Just as we, when we see someone being baptized, we resonate with that physical story that's being told. Even without words, we're resonating with that picture that's being played out of death and resurrection. that is what is happening with yoga. We are acting out. We are making of our bodies graven images, and that's painful to weaker brothers. And there are some who really enjoyed their yoga practice. It's difficult for them. So think in terms of your weaker brother when you consider yoga. And lastly, unbelievers who buy into the fact that things can be spiritual but not religious, they too are watching what we do. So as Christians, when we go and participate in yoga or approve of a friend doing yoga, what we may be saying to them without even realizing what we're doing is, I'm a Christian, but what you're doing over there and what you're learning over there is not all that different from what I believe. You might not say it with your words, but it's the implicit witness of your approval of this thing that has taken so many people down a bad road. And as we think about the weaker brothers, bringing it back to school, we have to be thinking of our children. They are vulnerable. They are still learning the foundations of reality around them, and we must not mask the beauty of the gospel in anything that we approve for them. Both our covenant children and the children who may not be inside a church setting, but who are friends with our families and watching the things that we're approving around us. So I would plead for your prayers. Please pray for Encinitas. I am blessed to have my children in a Christian school in another community now. I have so many friends whose children are stuck in Encinitas, stuck with this program. It's happening across the nation. Pray for our lawyers who are taking this to appellate court. Our good friend Deborah Duart is here. She filed an amicus brief along with several other ministries on behalf of the parents who are standing up in Encinitas. And please pray for your family and friends who, without knowing it, possibly, are being affected by this practice and by this worldview. Thank you for your time.